Welcome to the Island Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Jumpin' James, what would Larry David do in free agency, Herbert?
What a wonderful question.
That's the question that maybe we throw Kevin Love's way, because he just Instagrammed an old picture of Larry David with the hashtag mood.
It's from 1985, apparently, according to the internet.
Okay.
I don't know how much you know about, like, early career Larry David before...
I know a decent amount.
Okay. Because you know the stories, like, he would, like, go up to do his, like, stand-up, and, like, there was, like, one infamous time when he looked at the crowd and just scanned their faces and then said, F you, and walked off.
Yeah.
So that's personally what I think Kevin Love is doing looking at his Twitter mentions right now.
Coincidentally enough, I've been rewatching Curb Your Enthusiasm at night.
That's fantastic.
As I fall asleep, and I'm almost done with the series again. I've probably watched the series 5 or 6 times all the way through. I mean, it's one of my favorite shows. I kind of wish, I don't know who this would be, but I want Kevin to have a Leon equivalent in the, because Leon's just like the greatest character.
Wait, hold on. Damon Jones.
I feel like Leon's a little more relevant than that. Perk and Leon, that is just a rude comparison.
I'm sorry.
The replies to Kevin Love's tweeting of the picture are amazing.
These aren't safe to read on a podcast, are they? You're going to break podcast laws that don't exist.
I'm going to break podcast laws. Someone says, you left the Cavs, and then there are 4 crying emojis. Come to Philly. He hasn't left the Cavs. Come to Philly. Stay in Cleveland, fam. Come to Boston. Resign, but I think that meant resign. Bron don't want you back, fam. Come back to Minnesota. Whoa. Come to the Knicks for cheap.
For cheap.
Hashtag all in Clee. What does this mean, Gurr? There's a Miss You Bro. There's someone with a bunch of shamrocks.
Do you think the Miss You Bro is from some, like, an old college friend?
This is from Cavs Kara.
Oh.
Whose location...
It's not Russell Westbrook.
Location is USA Turkey.
USA Turkey.
USA slash Turkey.
Okay.
And so. The profile is Kara. Hashtag basketball. Hashtag NBA. Hashtag NBA Finals 2015. Hashtag Cleveland Cavaliers. Hashtag Cavs. Hashtag all in Clee. Hashtag Cavs Nation. Hashtag PG. Hashtag Kyrie Irving. Hashtag LeBron James. Hashtag Dwayne Wade. Hashtag Shaq. And, as you probably assume from this run of hashtags, hashtag ice hockey.
What an interesting character.
Yeah, so how about that?
That's an incredible collection of hashtags.
So all right, Kevin Love opted out, which means he's leaving the Cavaliers.
You don't get to dismiss my suggestions of who his Leon would be and not offer up one of your own.
All right. Well, we're gonna have a Leon.
It could be Westbrook.
It's gotta be. Well, that's the thing. It's gotta be someone who can be boisterous, who can command a crowd.
You don't think Perkins can be boisterous?
No, they left him out of. They never. The Thunder never invited him to do anything. That was a couple of times, and that was maybe the greatest moment in social media history.
I agree. Not anymore. We have Marcus Cousins and the snakes in the grass.
Well, that's true. That was pretty great, too. But, all right, so Kevin Love's Leon. It's got to be someone could it be Kobe?
Kobe
will say anything.
Yeah, but Kobe's not like a sidekick. I don't think Leon thinks of himself as a sidekick, though.
I kind of want Dirk to be his Leon.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. How about that? And crossing racial barriers with that comparison.
No, that is mostly why I love it.
Yeah.
So Dirk Leon Nowitzki.
Dirk Leon Nowitzki. So Kevin Love is gone.
To Dallas.
He's gone to Dallas. We're breaking the news right now. So Kevin Love opted out, which will net him, what is it, about $2.6 million next year?
Yeah.
So if he had stayed all in Cleveland for next season, at his current hashtag ice hockey salary, he would have made like $16.1 million, right? 16.2, mm-hmm. Something like that. The max for next season with a player of his service time, well, I don't know. If sometimes you see service time, that makes it sound like he's in the military. He's not in the military. Well, he might be in like ROTC or something. I don't think he is.
I would not bet on that.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that he's not in the military. But Love's time in the NBA nets him about $18.7 million. I think Jeff Zilgit tweeted out.
Yes.
So that's just from filling out some paperwork. I don't even think he filled out the paperwork. I think his agent did, or an assistant to his agent. So
if I could employ someone to fill out paperwork for me to get an extra $2.6 million,
I would do it.
Me too. I wouldn't even think hard about it.
It doesn't seem like a bad idea.
So it's not news that he opted out. Like it's just not. That was always going to happen. You know what is news though? Aside from the Larry David thing.
Hmm.
The Boston Celtics.
This was my afternoon. I mean, I can't even tell you how dumbfounded I was by this. First of all, like, I don't want to be mean here. I don't think him going to Boston is out of the question.
I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea.
I think there are selling points for doing it. You stay in the East, Brad Stevens coaches you, and you fit in that system beautifully. I mean, Kelly Olynyk had some moments in that system. Kevin Love's a lot better than Kelly Olynyk.
Yeah.
So he would just be a constant moment of that system. there's some... I don't know. I guess technically there's some talent on that
Isaiah
roster.
Thomas is good.
Sure. I just don't think... I don't think players are like, man, I got to get out of this situation so I can go play with Isaiah Thomas.
I mean, I might be. But yeah, players probably aren't.
Right.
I think
he's fine. I don't think he's a selling point. I think he's like, oh yeah, we got another score on this team. That's nice.
I just think... the selling point would not be any of those players in particular. Like, okay, let's just put it out there. Like, the report from Woj was that they were going to try to entice Kevin Love by also getting Paul Pierce to come back.
Right.
By
the way, Paul Pierce turns 38 in October.
And Robin Lopez, which actually, like, makes a lot of sense as a guy to play next to Kevin Love. Just, again...
he'd be very good.
It's not... the guy that gets people really excited. Like, Lopez, not a huge name.
Lopez isn't quite as... well, I don't know. Maybe he is. I was thinking, like, he's not quite as good as Mozgov, but he could be Mozgovian.
He could definitely be Mozgovian.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get 28 points out of him in a playoff game, probably. Right. But
oh, man. I'm watching an SUV try to get out of this tight parallel parking situation. It looks like Big Baby trying to get out of a wetsuit. This is not going to end well. Sorry, that just broke my train of thought, but let's keep going.
No, that broke my entire brain.
So here were the arguments I got from Celtics fans on why Love to Boston makes sense, and it was like, oh, well, they've won 17 titles. It's a winning culture. I don't think it's a winning culture. I think it used to be.
Brad Stevens, it will be a winning
it
culture.
It will be,
it's
but
a matter
like,
of time.
Yeah, but you can't just say, oh, we're the Celtics... you know, in Kevin Love's lifetime, they've won one championship.
Yes.
And they have the 13th most wins. Dallas, Miami, Detroit, Indiana, Chicago, Portland, Houston, OKC/Seattle, Utah, Phoenix, Lakers, and the Spurs, in ascending order, have more wins in Kevin Love's lifetime than the Celtics do. So I just, and it's not like, oh, the Celtics suck. It's just this idea of like, I'm not buying this Celtics lore, to entice free agents. Just like I'm not buying the Lakers thing anymore because Dr. Jerry Buss isn't there. Red Auerbach isn't in Boston anymore. You know, rest in peace. Like, to both of those guys. Like, it's just like, that's not the situation. That's what brought them in. It was, they could sell you on that thing. They don't have that salesman anymore. And it's not that you can't sell them on it now. I just don't think in 2015 that this is a thing.
Okay. I'm going to make the same point in a non-serious and then a serious way.
All right.
When Kevin Love was in Minnesota, like they, that last year, like they were a pretty good team.
Sure.
And the whole thing, excuse me, the whole thing when we talked about that team was like, imagine if they were in the East. Now he can have the Wolves in the East. That's the unserious way of things.
Sure.
The serious way is like, look, if he really wants to be a superstar, and he wants to be in an offense that revolves around him that would actually be a lot of fun to play in, and also would have a chance of competing and going far, then I think this is a perfectly fine option. If he wants to win a title, though, then like you don't leave Kyrie Irving and LeBron James and a team that just went to the finals
right
in order to go to Boston. So it depends where his priorities are.
I also just think like a 1-1 in terms of contract and reevaluate next year, reevaluate in 2017. There are rumors that the Celtics or Cavs or somebody, or I guess it would have to be the Cavs, are prepared to offer him like a 5-year, $100 million contract. And the only reason you take that if you're Kevin Love is you're worried about your back, right?
That is the only reason.
The only reason. Otherwise, it makes no sense financially.
If he's not totally freaked out about his own health, then I think he does the 1-1 or just a straight 1.
Right.
But, I mean, the 1-1 makes more sense. He has the power there. And I think that's what we've, like, whenever we've talked about this, we've said that's what makes the most sense. Like, it doesn't, it's like, and you have to think about, like, I don't know how much he cares about this stuff, but, like, I think it's almost, like, it's just human to care a little bit, at least, is, like, you look bad if you bolt when the team, A, gave up 2 number one picks to get you, and B, just made it to the finals with you injured. Like, it feels like he would just take such a beating in terms of just fan perception, media perception, everything, if he left this Cleveland team. And I'm not saying that he would necessarily deserve that. I think, like, when you are a free agent, you have the right to do what you want, regardless of if you show up and you say you're all in or not. Hashtag. But, like, that's just the reality of the situation. Like, I think that would be putting a huge burden on himself in Boston or in, like, wherever.
I agree with you. I also think, like, to leave LeBron at 30, 31 makes no sense. To leave LeBron at 32, 33, yeah, I could buy that.
Yeah, and you might have a title or two by then.
Right, exactly. You might be bringing a championship mentality to your next team. Like, to me, that makes sense. Although, I also thought, I mean, all right, these are different situations, so it's a dumb comparison to make, but I was going to say, I also thought it'd be dumb for LeBron to leave the Heat last year.
Yeah.
And he, you know, just had different priorities of getting his personal life in order with that kind of stuff, but Love doesn't necessarily have that same, I guess technically if he went to LA, that could be a reason for him, but I don't really see that happening.
I could see it happening later.
Yeah, I could see that happening in 2 years or a year from now. But yeah, like I think there are ways you sell Boston to Kevin Love. I don't think a 38-year-old Paul Pierce, Robin Lopez, and playing, you know, having Jared Sullinger back you up is one of them.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's honestly in the East, like, to me, that's not crazy to see it getting home court advantage, but that says more about the East than it does about the team. But that's just how I look at it. I think it's always been more likely that he would stay. I don't know if you want to get into this report about LeBron not recruiting him, but I don't think that really matters. It's just, you know, we've learned, like, you referenced LeBron last year, like, we've learned not to rule anything out.
Right.
So that's why, like, we can laugh about this a little, but it's also like, well, let's say he decides to go to Boston. Like, we've at least considered this. Like, there are valid reasons, even if it's just, like, Paul Pierce, like, him going back. Like, that's gonna tilt the table for you. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe Paul Pierce 4 years ago, but even then, that was pushing it.
Yeah.
I don't think those are the ways to sell. And I just, I mean, God, you were that close to a title. Yeah, you didn't get to play much in the playoffs because of the injury, but, man, that's a... You really got to want to be the guy.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that after just 1 year of not being the guy, he necessarily wants to go back to it. Do you think the LeBron stuff, like, did, I don't know if you saw the report, it was like Chris Haynes of the Cleveland Plain Dealer or the Northeast Ohio.
No, that's media, not a thing.
NEOMG.
Cleveland.com, we can say.
Okay. But he said LeBron is not going to re-recruit him. He thinks it's sort of self-evident why he should want to stay. So
I mean, I agree with LeBron there. Like, yeah, what do you have to sell him on? I mean, I think that's more on David Blatt and David Griffin to recruit Kevin Love and say, like, look, we can use you better. We want to use you better. We want to have the best offense in the league thanks to you and LeBron and Kyrie. Mm-hmm. Let's go do this. I don't think that's on LeBron to recruit him.
Yeah. I just wrote the story about that. And one thing I didn't say in there that the more I think about it, I don't know if I should have wrote it, but it doesn't matter. Like the way, like I say it wouldn't hurt if LeBron gave him a call and said, hey, this is how I envision you fitting in next year. This is sort of what went down this year and what I think needs to change and blah, blah, blah. And just like be a part of that conversation, because I think there's going to be a conversation and it will involve Blatt and it will involve LeBron. I mean, assuming Blatt, like we talked about the Blatt situation, like just assuming that that was kind of overblown, like assuming everybody's basically going to be back, there will have to be a conversation about how they're going to play next year. And I imagine they would try to make Love feel a bit more comfortable if he came back. And I think it would be nice. It's not mandatory, but it would be nice if LeBron was a part of that, because I think it was obvious to everybody that Love struggled to find his way this year at times. He had some stretches where he looked more comfortable than others, and certainly some games where he looked more comfortable than others. But I think overall he didn't fit in as seamlessly as we kind of thought at the beginning of the year. So if LeBron was a part of convincing him that it'll be better, cool, but that's not his job. He doesn't necessarily have to. So I don't think we need to blow this out of proportion. I don't think we need to he doesn't care if Love comes back or not. I think he should care.
Yeah, no, I think he knows the benefit of it. I also think he knows that, like, this is a 26-year-old free agent who can make up his own mind. I mean, they have a team that was pretty close to a title. I mean, I don't think they're as close as, you know, just needing two more wins. I think it goes beyond that. But I think he knows, like, I think LeBron feels comfortable of, hey, you can come back to this team that just made the NBA Finals with all these injuries, or you can go to that Celtics team that won 40 games, or 38, or whatever they want. You know, like, yeah. I mean, that could be. I think that that's the way to go, and I do think it's more on management and coaching to make Love feel wanted.
Totally.
I don't. I also, to like your point of like LeBron can make a call. I don't think he has Kevin Love's number. I think that was pretty evident when he tweeted the stop trying to fit out and just fit in. Or whatever he tweeted. I think he calls him if he has his number. I'm pretty sure he thinks his name is Kerry.
But would you want to play with LeBron if you thought that he thought your name was Kerry?
Yeah, I like winning.
You would just do it anyway. Yeah. Got it. Okay. That's a good answer.
Yeah. What else do we got?
There's more Kings nonsense.
Yeah, okay, so George Karl made comments yesterday.
He was at a children's golf clinic.
Yeah, children's golf clinic.
And he looked thrilled.
Yeah, he looked really happy about this. But hey, you start, you get those rumors going, and that's what you get. Basically said, like, he wants Cousins to commit or something like that.
He said, as long as he is fully committed to the franchise,
I'll stop trying to trade him.
That was, like, after being asked the same question, like, 3 or 4 times already.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
The point is, like, he didn't say, I'm not trying to trade him. Like, he just didn't say that.
Right.
He didn't come out and deny it all. He did what, I mean, Vlade kind of did too, is he said, you know, there are lots of fibs and lies. And I thought that was a funny phrase. But I don't know which part of it he considers a fib and or lie. But he clearly thinks he shouldn't be framed as the villain here, but at the same time, he's not trashing Cousins.
Right.
Because he can't.
Right.
Because even if you want to move him, you can't do that. Their leverage is already messed up anyway. He's also not denying it, really. He's not coming out and saying he wants him on the team. He's couching it in, like, if this and if that. So...
Yeah, it's just...
I am not inclined to... Like, if I was a Kings fan, I wouldn't feel any better about that.
No, I wouldn't feel any better, especially when there's been a report that the Kings are interested in JaVale McGee.
This is hilarious.
I mean, this has to be... I gotta think that this is either George Karl is just obsessed to the point of needing a restraining order about this 2013 Nuggets team, or this is the Kings kind of like a blazing middle finger right back at him in this situation.
Are they trying to get him to quit?
Because...
Could that be possible?
I mean, it's possible. I mean, Karl and McGee didn't really fit as, like, personalities and stuff, right? Like, they thought... They brought in McGee for Nene. they, you know, had a little bit of that success against the Lakers in the first round that first year with McGee, and then the next year it just didn't mesh.
Well, McGee had his Jerome James series.
Right. He has a Jerome James series. And then it's kind of like, Carl probably wouldn't want to coach JaVale again. I'm putting words in his mouth there, but I feel confident in saying that.
I went back and found a story where George Carl had said, "Crazy and lazy don't win in this league." And he was referring to JaVale McGee.
Crazy and lazy don't win in this league, but they certainly can get you a job as an NBA writer. I think I can attest to that.
So they win in this league.
Yeah.
So I don't know where the relationship is at this point. I don't know if they have one. I would be surprised if this happened. But I must say, when that report popped up, I wondered if I was indeed awake or if I was having a wonderful dream, because
right.
I think that's about the only way this situation could get funnier. And the NBA is a much more entertaining league with JaVale McGee in it. So whether he is in Sacramento or in Cleveland, I want him in the NBA.
I'm really mad he didn't stick with Philly.
He didn't stick with Philly, and then he backed out of that Boston deal because he wanted a player option for next year.
Yeah.
Which, like, what are you doing playing hardball? Like, you just got cut by the Sixers. Like, it didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be some hubris right there. Yeah, I don't know. This King situation's a mess.
It's a disaster.
It's a complete disaster.
Do you like my name for it? The Sacra Meltdown?
Ooh, I like Sacra Meltdown.
Boogie Nights is way too, like, fun sounding.
Sacramental? Well, that kind of sounds religious.
the sacramental institution, like, I don't know.
That would, yeah, that's probably a little too far. But yeah, Sacra Meltdown, I like that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So that's what's happening there. I don't know if we have any further updates, really.
I don't think so.
But it's still screwed up.
Yeah.
And
yeah, still has been fixed.
And I'm not sure if we talked about the fact that, like, the report was, like, this is what our colleague Ken Berger reported, was that ideally, like, this isn't just JaVale, that, like, this is why we're joking about it, is, like, he wants, I was going to say he wants Anthony Randolph and J.R. Smith. That's not true. He wants Ty Lawson, Kenneth Faried, and Wilson Chandler to all come reunite with him in Sacramento. And I just think, like, I'm going to get so confused over who's with what organization if this stuff happens. Like, you got Malone and D'Alessandro, Denver,
I said,
all of this stuff.
I said on Twitter that this is, like, this Nuggets, Kings, George Karl, Cousins thing is, like, the most awkward wife swap episode since Coolio and Mark McGrath. Which, by the way, if you can find that Son of Gun on YouTube or whatever, that's a time.
That's what I'm going to do as soon as we finish this podcast.
I was trying to, I had seen...
Right after, well, I'm going to also watch Mike James on Super Nanny, probably, but...
That's a great idea. I'd seen quite a few celebrity wife swaps, so I'm not, like, a religious viewer of it, but so just to make sure, like, the Coolio-Mark McGrath one was the most awkward one that I'd seen, I was looking up episodes, and apparently there's, like, a Vern Troyer-Heinz Ward episode.
What?
I gotta find that one. I don't know if it's aired yet or if it's going to air, but I saw that combination. That would be fascinating.
That's a winning combination.
That is a winning combination.
winning combination, like JaVale McGee,
yeah.
The Sacramento Kings.
Hey, speaking of winning combination, teams usually do better when they get rid of Monte Ellis. And he
historically true.
Yeah, he have it all in all being unrestricted free agency because he's opting out.
Did you see the report that he's supposedly going to have a meeting with Atlanta? I can't think of a less Monte Ellis.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me. I'm trying to think.
And I think Monte Ellis is a good, useful player. I just want to make that clear.
I thought he was with Dallas. Any time before that, I did not think that. But
Dallas used him perfectly.
Yeah, I was talking with someone today, and they asked, like, what do you think Monte would get in free agency? And I'm guessing, like, three years 40.
Maybe. I think
should it be more or less?
I think that's around the right ballpark.
Yeah.
I just think it depends at what stage of free agency he signs. Because if That's somebody true. Wants him early, I think he can get that.
That's true.
But I think later on, it could be different once teams start spending their cap space.
Yeah. Although, I don't know. There are a lot of teams with cap space, right?
Not a ton.
Oh, I kind of thought there were, but I may be...
Well, are there...
I don't know.
I guess they're enough. There are enough that he can get paid, for sure.
Yeah, but you're right. It does have to be something where you got to set that market early for yourself.
I think so.
Even an unrestricted free agency.
I think the most important thing for him, though, is to find the right fit. I mean, we saw it in Dallas.
Yeah, I like
he needs to essentially play point guard.
I like their reported backup plan of once Ellis is gone is Danny Green.
They're not going to get him, are they?
Why not?
I can't see the Spurs letting him go. I can't see him wanting to leave the Spurs for the Mavericks unless there's a huge monetary difference.
There might be.
You think they'll, like, max him out?
I mean, not max him out, but I could see him getting $452.
Wow.
He's a 3 and D guy. He's like an ultimate 3 and D guy. Like, guys like him, guys like Carroll, like, I think these are the contracts they're going to get.
I don't hate the contract. I think he's awesome. I think people still don't realize how good he is, even though he was, like, almost finals MVP if he had kept that up the whole series.
Awesome defender, incredible shooter.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
And he's a good ball mover. He's not an awesome creator or anything.
No.
Everybody on your offense needs that.
No, he dribbles the ball like it's a medicine ball. But
that's fine.
Yeah, but it's fine because he passes it like it's a potato, hot potato.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. That's...
I wasn't going to jump in, but I was hoping you'd get there.
I think he's going to see a crazy contract. It's not going to be crazy, but it's
what he earned.
Some people will be like, "What the hell?"
I just think he should stay. I don't want to see him anywhere else, frankly. But I might be just too attached to this particular Spurs team.
No, I don't want him to go anywhere. But I think you got to pay him to keep him.
I think they're willing to do that because it's not. This is kind of what I wrote about. This is not the NBA 5 years ago,
right?
When Danny Green was able to like be cut and then scooped up for nothing,
right?
That just those guys aren't there anymore. So to replace him, I just don't see how you're getting 80% of his value with just some bargain signing anymore. Because the guys that have those skills get paid now. That's just the state of the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, that's the type of guy you need.
Absolutely.
Do we have anything else before we get into some draft stuff?
We could talk about the Sixers potentially being, I mean, not potentially, they are being investigated by the MBPA.
It's an interesting question of like kind of like business ethics in this because they don't get to the salary floor in free agency the last 2 years. They've had to trade their way into that. Which is fine, and even if they don't meet the salary floor, they're still paying the money. So for those that aren't aware, like you have a salary floor in the NBA, which I think is 90% of the cap?
Something like that.
Something around that. So 90%...
Might be exactly that.
Yeah, 90% of the cap that you have to spend to make sure you're fielding a quote-unquote competitive team, which is funny enough.
But there's no rule that says you have to field a competitive team anyway.
No, not necessarily.
They weren't even the worst team in the league. Right. This makes me so angry. Anyway, continue.
Right. But okay. But calm down. Don't let that Canadian temper get out of control.
Such a temper.
I don't want to have to be Putin you in your place.
Oh, no.
Can that
be the title of the podcast?
I don't think I can get that one to fly. So you got to spend 90% of the cap. But you just have to do it by the next free agency, right? And if you don't spend 90% of the cap, the difference between what you do spend and that salary floor gets divided up amongst the players on your roster. So you're still spending the money no matter what.
But this hasn't even happened to the Sixers.
Right.
They've always ended up signing.
Something. Yeah, but I think the question is are they messing with the free agent market by doing this tactic? And then if so, that's going to piss the union off, and the union is the one in having them investigated about a breach in the collective bargaining agreement.
Yeah, I'm not sure what examples the union can really point to.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, I think it's a fascinating kind of topic in terms of how this gets viewed by whatever mediating party there is.
I just think that every summer there are teams that their prime objective is to cut costs It's to shed like veterans, whatever, avoid mediocrity, get young players, get draft picks, build for the future. This is not new. The difference is that the Sixers have been extreme about it. But every summer there have been teams that, no matter which player an agent called them to talk about, they say, oh, we're not interested in adding anybody. The Sixers have done that. They've done that in the summer of 2013, summer of 2014, and they're about to do it again. Probably, we don't know. Maybe they decide they want to try to get a free agent this time. We don't know. But to me, they don't have to. And to me, it's not that big a deal that they didn't. They have been completely transparent about their plan. So they're not breaking any rules to me. I don't think they're. What the allegation was that they were going against the spirit of negotiation.
Right.
And I don't really understand what that means, because you don't negotiate with people unless you think they are going to improve your chances of winning sustainably, which is what the Sixers are trying to do. They're not trying to win as many games in the present as they can. They're trying to acquire star players that will help them win championships eventually, which, I mean, I just sound like Hinkie's mouthpiece right now, but it's fine. Like that is like the hashtag process, you know? That is what
Right.
they want to do, and I get it, and I don't think that it's any different than what the Thunder did originally, except they didn't draft guys that were hurt. And they made a couple of other moves, like they got like Cephalosha and some other vets.
I don't even
But
think, though, that like the drafting guys that are hurt thing is a correct, accusation of them. Like
I just
I like
think
that seems to imply
didn't draft them
that,
because they were hurt.
right, that seems to imply like, oh, we don't want these guys to be healthy as we have them as a player. Like people, oh, they're drafting guys that hurt. They're drafting guys with huge potential. Nerlens Noel has potential to be a great defender in this league. Joel Embiid has the potential to be a top 10 player in this league if he's healthy. Like I don't think that people that use that as bait or as ammunition to disparage the Sixers' plan, like I think that's disingenuous.
This is a weird thing to say, but imagine
Oh boy.
if Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook had suffered these horrible injuries when they were in their first couple of years in the league.
Yeah.
The Thunder wouldn't have just abandoned that plan.
No.
Like they wouldn't have like they just would have had to deal with it.
Right.
And that probably would have meant doing the same thing they did, just kind of making it a bigger timeline.
Right.
And I think there could have been a discussion then, if injuries had happened to hit that team, about whether what they were doing was cool. And I think there was a little bit of a discussion then, but I don't think it really mattered that much. It wasn't this huge thing that it is now. But I
Well,
can't.
because we could see the potential there, right? Like we saw them on the court, so it was easier to be like, oh yeah, I get what they're doing. Whereas people can now overreact because we didn't see Nerlens the first year. We're not seeing Embiid the first year, maybe parts of, or all of the second year. We don't see Saric the first 2 years. It's that kind of overreaction and kind of like skewing the facts of to make your disparaging comments against them,
I sure as hell
hold
saw
more
something
weight.
from Nerlens this past year, though.
He's a nice player. I mean, I think his defense was a little overstated by Sixers supporters, but you can see the potential to be a great defender.
Yeah, and I think he got better on both ends as the season went on
Yeah, he's not a, I mean, he's
in
not a
a
good
huge
offensive
way.
player, but he's not like it's not like he's Kwame Brown out there, right?
I think he made huge steps. Like, I
Yeah.
think he's going to be a good offensive player,
Yeah,
if not there yet
I think he'll
now.
have a decent like post move and counter post move. I think he'll have a decent like 10-foot jumper, or maybe even stretch it out to 15 feet. Like, I think he can do some things. He's a pick and roll guy.
Yeah, but I mean, back to what we were talking about, like I would be really interested to hear a more detailed version of what they're complaining about. Like, is this are they going to be against their standard contract that they offer to second round guys? Like, I don't know that they're breaking any rules with that. Like, I just
Yeah.
it's interesting to me that the union has essentially decided that the Sixers are anti-player, because to me they're not. To me, they've given other players a chance to carve themselves NBA roles
Yeah, I mean
who wouldn't have got
that's a
otherwise.
really good point. Like guys like, well, I guess Robert Covington would have, but there are other
Not
guys.
necessarily. Like he wouldn't necessarily be a rotation player. Like Jeremy Grant sure as hell wouldn't have got the chance to do what he did last year on any other team. He was so raw.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Jeremy Grant, Robert Covington, guys like KJ McDaniels before he was.
I mean, that's the perfect
traded.
Example.
Yeah, like I mean, those are
because when
those
he
are
went
opportunities.
To another team, he couldn't play.
Right, those are opportunities to go out there and set a market for yourself.
Exactly.
So that's a good point. Yeah.
And yeah. I think it's good for those guys' careers to actually get coaching on a team that cares about your development instead of only caring about the first 10 players or whatever.
If we're gonna
to get minutes, like I can't see how this is anti-player.
If we're gonna get a an investigation from the players' union or because of the players' union into this, I want an honest polling with lie detector tests of how many NBA veterans wanted to go play for Philly, wanted to negotiate with Philly to get a contract.
That will not be a long list.
That will not be a long list.
I think they have set the market for themselves for a certain type of player. Young players that need minutes, need time, need coaching, because that's kind of where they've banked on themselves separating themselves from other teams, is they want to have the best player development system in the league.
Yeah.
I don't know that they have it. We'll kind of see, but they're clearly really trying to do that. So I think, sure, veterans haven't gone there, but why would they want to? Like, it doesn't make sense. I'm not sure. I don't think Jason Richardson and like Luke Bamute had a horrible time or anything, but I think if you ask them, they'd probably honestly rather be on the bench for the Warriors or something and like competing and winning.
Right.
Even if they don't really get to play. Like, I don't know. It's probably it's very apparent how pro Hinkie I am, so we can just...
All right, let's get into the draft. We have three positions to talk about today. Yesterday's podcast, we talked about the point guards and the shooting guards. Today we're talking small forwards, power forwards, and centers. And just to refresh everyone's memory, we're going off Sam Vecenie's position rankings on CBSSports.com. You can check that, CBSSports.com/NBA/draft. I think that's the... I don't know. You can definitely go to /NBA and find it from there. I feel confident saying that.
Me too.
We're not going to... I don't think we have to go through all 10 unless we have 10 people to say.
But 10 people that are worth talking about?
Yeah, but we can... I think there are like 7 small forwards worth talking about.
Okay, let's
like
do
we
it.
We start there. So number one on his list, Justice Winslow out of that Duke University.
I've heard of that place.
He's pretty good.
I love his game. I think most people do. It's if you get beyond the numbers and all that stuff, I think he plays the game with such determination, and he's going to be such a good defender. And it's the same reason why, you know, you fell in love with the MKGs of the world before. Like he plays a very intense style, but he's also more skilled than some of the other guys like that. We saw a lot during the NCAA tournament, of what he can do with the ball in his hands and the way that he can create. And I think he has, you know, to use like draft speak, I think he has a really high floor because of his defense, and then he has a high ceiling because of what he's shown on offense too.
He's got a tall house.
Such a tall house.
Yeah, he's got a really tall house, like that house in Lethal Weapon 2 that was on stilts.
Exactly.
That's what I would say. I don't want to be an alma materist and say that he's like other Duke small forwards or Duke wings before him, but
you're going to be one of them.
But I'm going to be one. I was really high on Rodney Hood, and I'm still really high on Rodney Hood. He reminds me of like Rodney Hood, like a pissed off Rodney Hood. I think Winslow's going to be awesome.
I'd
like to see him at the Knicks. I'd like to see him in Orlando. I'd like to see him in Sacramento, in Denver, in Detroit, any of those teams, I think are fantastic fits for him.
Yeah, and I think it doesn't matter which way you look at it. If you look at it through the scouting lens, the stats lens, like, it's whatever. Like, he plays with passion, and he also is really skilled, and he also has all those cliche things that coaches like to talk about being, like, a winner and the hardest worker and all that stuff. He's that guy. So I think while you might not necessarily get as excited about his highlight reel as certain other guys, you're not going to be disappointed in him if your team drafts him, no, like from four onward.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a playmaker on both ends of the floor, and I think he can shoot. The next two guys, I want to see how you rank them, because I think there's some merit to grouping these guys. Stanley Johnson and Kelly Oubre. Who do you like better?
I think I like Johnson better, okay. But I don't think it's... I think they're similar. I don't think there's a ton of separation.
I agree with that. I think I like Oubre better.
Why?
I think he's more versatile on offense. I trust his shot more. And he's kind of arrogant, which I like. but I like Stanley a lot. Like Stanley's going to be like a... He seems like a big, small forward who can probably guard 2 through 4, right?
He can be a stretch four eventually.
Yeah, I think so.
I think he's strong enough for sure. So I think that really appeals, especially the way the game is going.
Yeah.
I think we're at this stage where there was some story that I can't remember. I wish I could give proper credit, but there was... I think it was Steve Kerr that had the quote that said, "You look at players now, and the question is, okay, can you shoot and then go around and guard three positions?"
Yeah.
Those guys will do fine. And there's more and more pressure for prospects that play on the wing and even that play the four now, which is kind of crazy, that they be able to do that. And I think he can be that guy. I think he's not as sure a thing as a guy like Winslow. I think it's
makes sense that
we have them separated. But I think he has a physical profile of a guy that can be a starter.
Yeah, I think Stanley Johnson, you know, projects to be that 2 through 4 defender.
Yes.
Who can score the ball. I mean, I don't think his scoring at Arizona was utilized nearly enough. And, you know, probably didn't have to be. But I think he could be a big-time scorer. Whereas I think Oubre is like a 1 through 3 defender. I think he'll be able to defend point guards. I think he'll be able to defend 2s and 3s. I don't think he'll be a big guy that can defend 4s and be a stretch 4. But I like his instincts. I think, I don't know. Some people say that he needs to fix his shot a little bit. I think it's good. I think he's got a smooth jumper, and I think that he's confident in it. And I think he's going to be a guy who at least hits corner 3s.
What did he shoot from the line? I'm sorry to put you on the spot, but I know you have a computer there.
I do. I own a computer. that's a correct assessment. Let me. I'm pulling this up right now. ¿Dónde está Kelly Oubre? Here he is. I probably wasn't correct Spanish, by the way. He shot 71% from the line.
Yeah, that's okay.
It's not great.
It's not great, but I don't think it's indicative of a shot that's like totally messed up either.
Right.
I think you can improve that. It's the kind of thing where I think we get carried away sometimes with like, okay, this guy's not an awesome shooter. That's not the same as they can't shoot.
Yeah, and he's got a 7'2" wingspan.
That is appealing.
On a 6'6" dude. Player. Yeah, like he's got, to paraphrase Ice Cube, he's got arms for days.
I'm really glad you did that.
Put a week on it. And he can jump. I mean, 37-inch vertical at the combine. I think he's going to be just a great slasher.
Where do you think he goes?
I'd love him on Miami. I think he fits Miami really well.
Yeah.
I think he'd go anywhere from 10 to 20, but I think in that 10 to 14 range is ideal.
I think I can't see him slipping past like 15 or so, but
yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, God, imagine him on that Hawks team. That's a nice fit.
That would work rather well.
Yeah, or put him...
work better than Monte.
Put him next to Paul George in Indiana.
Sure.
I think that's a good fit as well. Put him in Phoenix. That's a nice fit.
Speaking of Phoenix, this is a complete diversion. They're apparently going to make a push for Mr. Love, too.
I mean, he fits. With what they do, that's not bad. I don't know about putting Markieff at the 3, which you'd have to do, but...
I think you'd have to move him.
Probably. And then you have to move Marcus.
Yeah, obviously.
You can't split them.
They lose all their power.
Right, they lose their power. Well, then maybe that's the way to go. If you're the Suns. You know, kind of how like LeBron had the Heat draft Shabazz Napier?
Mm-hmm.
If you're the Suns, you only trade one Morris.
Wow. You trade them both to different teams.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Then you risk... You want to control the contract of one of them.
Okay.
And so, yeah, you have a guy who's a little moody and half of himself. I don't know if that's correct math when it comes to twins, but half of himself.
That's how it works.
Just stewing on the bench. You don't have to worry about that.
Son's rebuilding plan.
Yeah, that's the way to go. Okay, let's see how you group the next two. Rondé Hollis-Jefferson and Sam Dekker.
Oh, this is tough. I like them both for completely different reasons. I'd have Dekker first.
I'd have Dekker first as well. I think I'm very high on Dekker.
I think he can do so much. And I don't understand. This is going to sound like weirdly hot takey. Ooh. And there will probably be people that get mad at me.
Got my mitts
but I know
on.
I know you agree with me, though.
Got my oven mitts on. Go for it.
He's better than Frank Kaminsky.
Oh, he's way better than Frank Kaminsky.
He should get drafted before Frank Kaminsky.
Way better than Frank Kaminsky.
And we're hearing this stuff like, if Kaminsky was European, where would he get drafted? It's like, he's already, like, to me,
his stock
is already too high for what it is. And I have nothing against him. I just don't think his game translates that well to the NBA.
He spent like 12 years at Wisconsin, too. I mean, it's not like I think that's a good comparison if we were talking like a 19-year-old one-and-done big man from Wisconsin. He was there 4 years.
I think he'll be a good. I mean, we'll get to him later.
Yeah.
So I won't say anything there. I think Dekker can come in and just kind of tick a lot of boxes for you. And
yeah.
He can play immediately, and I think any team from, let's say, from like 10 to 16 should be delighted to have him, even though he's not really projected to go as high as 10.
I look at him like Richard Jefferson with a 3-point shot.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah.
Like earlier, we were talking about younger Richard Jefferson.
Not 49-year-old Richard Jefferson with a 3-point shot, but young, like, I think he stretches the floor. I think he'll hit corner threes, and I think if you close out too hard on him, he's going to drive past you and dunk on somebody. I think he has that kind of mentality. I think he'll turn into a good defender in the NBA, or at least a good team defender.
I don't think he'll be like a stopper, but I think he will be a totally solid defender for you.
And I'm not worried about his, you know, his shot was inconsistent year to year from outside, but I think he's not going to be asked to do the same things in the NBA that he was at Wisconsin.
No.
And so I think it's easier to slide into that shooter role. So yeah, I like him much better than Rondé Hollis-Jefferson. I actually like Justin Anderson more than Rondé Hollis-Jefferson.
I think Anderson's super underrated.
That dude can flat out shoot.
He can shoot, but it's everything else too.
Yeah.
You know, like he's long.
Smart
he's
playmaker.
An athlete. He can... It's weird because I really like Rondé in terms of, like, he can just go in and play defense for you now.
Yeah.
And you know that.
That's the thing. When I still thought Thibodeau was going to be the coach for Chicago, I was like, this is a Thibs guy. Like,
yeah.
He would have been perfect as one of those guys.
Absolutely. That would fit the profile of who they take seemingly every year,
right,
aside from last year.
Right.
But yeah, that's not a thing anymore. I think I am intrigued by Rondé, and I wonder what he'll look like in a few years. And I would bet on him succeeding, but I think the other two are safer bets as two-way players.
Yeah, and it's just when Rondé can learn how to shoot, if he learns how to shoot, you know, he goes way up. But that jumper is really bad.
It needs fixing.
Yeah, and it just until he fixes that, I have a hard time putting him above Dekker and above Anderson.
Yeah, I think you. Yeah, I think you talked me into that.
Yeah, and then the last guy I like is Anthony Brown.
What do you like about his game?
He's like 45% shooter from three, and like legitimate. And you know he's older. I think he'll be 23 by the time the season starts, or early in the season. But he's just a smart guy. The question I have about him is, he measured 6'5" without shoes and 6'8" with shoes, and that doesn't make any sense.
What shoes is he wearing?
I don't know. Like he's wearing heels or something. Like this is.
Is he wearing Justice Winslow's house?
He might be, but he's got a good wingspan. He's got kind of strong. He can hit threes. I think he comes in and like if a team in the late first round takes him, he immediately slides into that rotation.
You want the Wolves to get a pick and trade for him, don't you?
I would love if he fell to 31 for the Wolves. Ooh,
that's the noise you'll make.
That's I got the vapor, something fierce. That's how I talk about that.
I'm in.
All right, let's go to the power forwards.
Yeah.
We'll try to go through these a little bit quicker. Kristaps Porzingis is the number one power forward. Sam is putting Towns as a center in this situation.
That's fine.
So
I think Towns is a center.
Porzingis, top power forward prospect, right?
Who else would it be?
Exactly. Number two on his list is Bobby Portis. Number three is Trey Lyles. Number four is Kevin Looney. And number five is Montrezl Harrell. Harrell? I'm never going to learn his
name. I think it's just Montrez.
Montrez Harrell.
Yeah, one of those silent L's.
So I would go Lyles second, Looney. I'd go Lyles second, Portis third, Looney fourth, Harrell fifth. But I think after Lyles, it's very close between the other three.
Can we just talk about Looney?
Let's talk about Looney.
As a man that lives in the city of Toronto, and every mock draft, well, not I don't know if that's the case today, but for a while. Most mock drafts have just had this guy penciled in for the Raptors. And I don't really think that makes a lot of sense, just personally, because they already have Bruno sitting there, and it's just another guy that won't play and that has a lot of potential and is long. But anyway, he was like a top six pick in some mock drafts earlier in the year. Do you think everybody was just going crazy? Or do you think that he has slipped too far based on the way that the season unfolded for him?
Looney is... I think Looney's much more potential than substance at the moment, but I don't know. Like I like his game. I think it'll depend on like how reliable of a pick-and-pop guy is he, because I think that's where he'll really make his money.
And he's not a three-point shooter yet.
Not a three-point shooter yet. Maybe reminds me a little bit of like a smaller David West.
Sure. Yeah.
I like him though. I mean, I think he didn't have a great season at UCLA, and that probably hurts because he did seem to be a much higher guy, coming in as a freshman. But I don't know. Like, it's interesting to me that I figured he'd be a guy that worked out really well, and stopped working out early because he got a promise, and that didn't really happen.
That didn't happen at all.
Yeah.
My thing with him, and I want to make sure to phrase this correctly, is because at first I was just like, I don't get it. I don't understand why there's buzz about this guy, because I don't think the shot's great. I don't think he's athletic enough that when he's going up against guys that are his size or bigger, stronger, that he's going to be able to rebound that well. I don't think he's like a super awesome passer or like mid-range shooter or anything. Like, he just kind of has this awesome frame. So to me, I see the potential there. I see some of the numbers that he put up, and he's super young. And I just think if you're taking this guy, then it's because you know he's a worker and you know that he's going to get better. Because I think he has a really good base that you can work with. But I think for him, fit matters a lot. And getting the right development staff matters a lot. And getting a chance to play matters a lot, too.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So it's weird because a lot of where he's slotted to go, a lot of those teams probably wouldn't play him a ton as a rookie and maybe as a second-year player. So I'm interested to see where he goes, but I'm not super excited about him yet. And I was a little bit confused that he was ranked that high earlier on, to answer the question that I posed to you earlier.
Yeah, I mean, like, this maybe is a stretch for him, but I kind of like the idea of him going 12 to Utah, just because I think the development there would be super.
And putting him next to guys that can protect the rim like that, and right. I think that makes sense, whether you're playing him next to Gobert or next to Favors. Like, I think that does work.
Yeah.
I just don't think that they make that reach.
I think Bobby Portis ends up being kind of like the guy we just love the first couple of years of his career. Not that we won't love him after that, but I think...
What's going to happen?
No, but I think he has an immediate impact where we're just like, this guy went 16th or whatever he goes.
And he'll end up being like third in Rookie of the Year or something.
Yeah, like I just... like. He can shoot. He can defend. He's a monster on the boards. He's
yeah.
dunk on you. Like, I think he's going to be one of those guys where 15 years after you're like, oh, wow, that guy didn't make an all-star team?
Yeah.
You know, like, it just, it'll be a surprise, and he'll just be in this, like, kind of, the back of our brains constantly.
But you had Lyles ahead of him.
I do have Lyles ahead of him because I think Lyles, this is contingent on Lyles being a legitimate three-point shooter in the NBA, which I think he will be. But I think if he goes to, like, if the Knicks trade down, he goes to the Knicks because of that, or if he goes to Phoenix, or if he goes to Atlanta or Boston, like, I think he's just going to kill in those systems.
I think so, too. I also think that he's the weirdest player to watch now, like, based
he
on
is.
The role that he played. Like, he's, to me, he's closer to a five than he is a three.
Yeah, yo,
and
definitely.
He was playing the three the entire time because of the makeup of that ridiculous team.
Yeah, they were throwing him out there with Towns and Cauley Stein, and it's like, well, I guess.
Why do you think his rebounding numbers suck?
Yeah, I guess this guy's a small forward, but
yeah,
not really.
Like, no. But I, you know what, though? Like, the part of why I like him so much is that I think that long term will be good for him because of the way the league is going. You end up getting switched on to smaller guys, and it's not that he was amazing guarding smaller guys last year because he wasn't really. But he learned what to do, and he got repetitions in there. So I think that matters. I think it's the same kind of thing where you look at guys who come into the NBA, like Wade or Oladipo, and they're playing point guard because it'll help them later. I think him playing small forward will help him later, even though it didn't make him look as good as he could have elsewhere.
Right, yeah, you kind of learn those skills even through osmosis, essentially, right? Yeah. If it's not Bobby Portis, I really want Harrell on the Wizards. I want him running the floor with John Wall. I want him finishing alley-oops. Like, I feel like he is a perfect fit with this Wizards team.
I like that, too. Here's the thing with him. I can't see anybody getting, like, super excited about him being this major part of what you're doing, but I also can't see him failing.
Right. And I look at him as, like, and I think he'll be, maybe he's not as good of a rebounder, but I think he's going to be everything we want Kenneth Freed to be.
And if he's that, then that's awesome, not value that, where he's slotted to
right,
go.
That's a great value pick for, what, 17 through 21 or wherever the hell he goes.
Yeah.
I've
seen some mocks where he ends up like 25, 26. And if somebody gets there, they're lucky as hell.
Yeah, that's crazy. And then just, I guess they're, man, there's a lot of power forwards. All right, we'll just group these guys. Jordan Mickey from LSU, Chris McCullough from Syracuse, Jarrell Martin from LSU, and Christian Wood from UNLV. I would go Mickey, Wood, McCullough, Martin.
There's only one guy that I really want to talk about there.
Okay.
Can you guess who it is?
Christian Wood?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did we talk about him before? I can't remember.
I can't remember if we did. I know you and I have talked about him, but I don't know if it's been on the podcast.
That guy is a highlight machine.
He is.
And he it's weird because he's not a mystery. Like he played for UNLV. We have lots of tape, but it's sort of like when we got those highlights of Giannis.
Right.
And he was just running around and you're like, what is happening? Like, how is he making those plays? How is he finishing that? The thing is, I mean, with Giannis, there was a bit more. There was passing and stuff. With Wood, it's just like, it's crazy athleticism, just natural talent, but you don't know how he's going to fit in on a like professional basketball team.
Right.
I think there's a lot of work that he'll have to do, but I think he could make some general manager look brilliant in 3 years, or he could be out of the league.
I'm weary of McCullough because I've watched a bunch of him and I like him, but I can't figure out why he's like all of a sudden this guaranteed number one pick, or not number one, like first round pick. That's kind of crazy to me. But everyone else seems to love him, so I just feel like I'm missing something with him. And he's, you know, he's got great wingspan, he's athletic, he can dunk, he can rebound, he can block shots. But to me, like everything people say he is, I think Jordan Mickey is.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jordan Mickey is, if he goes in the second round, is a steal, an absolute steal. He can block shots, he finishes everything, he's a good mid-range shooter. I think he'll be able to stretch that out to three-point range. I love his versatility going from like maybe a little bit of three, but that's probably extreme, but at least four and five positions. And then Martin, I like Martin, but the more I watch him, the less I like. And I think I'm just swayed. I'm just swayed by the fact that he went between his legs in a game. I think that's what it is. And I feel really stupid for saying that, but that's, I think that's kind of what it is.
Don't feel stupid for saying that.
All right, let's do centers. I think we only need to do five centers, six centers.
Okay.
All right, number one is Towns.
I have no argument there.
Best prospect in the draft.
I rate Towns as the best point guard.
Okay, that's extreme, but all right. Towns is just, I think he can score at the same efficiency and level as Okafor. We know
just differently.
Yeah, just differently. We know the defense.
Read Zach's piece, by the way, on wolfamongwolves.com.
If you go to wolfamongwolves.com for whatever reason, it is on there, and it's I think it's a pretty decent breakdown of like how he would fit in for the Wolves.
Don't go to wolfamongstwolves.com.
Not my website.
You won't get there.
No. So then number two is Jahlil Okafor. I think we feel solid in that, right? Well, he's got to become a better defender. He's got to get in a little bit better shape. But at least I think I said it yesterday, but I don't buy that he doesn't fit into the modern NBA.
Yeah, we've talked about this a little. I get where that criticism comes from, because I don't think you get an efficient modern NBA offense that completely revolves around him.
Right.
Which you could have done before.
Right.
I don't think you can give him just post up after post up after post up, because I don't believe that he will be as like automatic of a post-up player as he was in college, but I think he'll be a good one. And I think he will can definitely be a part of a good offense. The concerns that I have are on the other end of the floor, but that's been talked about today.
Yeah. Number three, Willie Cauley-Stein. Love me some Willie Trill Cauley-Stein. I'm sorry. Some WTCS.
I'm so tempted to put WTCS above Okafor just for the shock factor. I'll leave it where it is. I'm in love with his game, though.
Leave your shot callers at home.
I've been seeing this stuff about, like, oh, in this mock draft, he's falling to 11. I'm just like, what? How in the world would this happen?
I mean, I do think there's kind of a sweet spot where if he doesn't go, like, 4, 5, 6, I think he could fall to, like, 10, 11, 12.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe not 12. I don't think he goes to Jazz. I think if he gets down to...
If I'm one of those teams, I just take him, even if I'm not in love with his game or his fit. He's the best player, and then you figure it out later.
If I'm Miami, I take him as Hassan Whiteside might not be that good insurance.
Yeah, or... I want us to play him together, which is probably a disaster, but defensively, that's terrifying.
Right, it could be, yeah.
Because he's not a guy that can only guard fours. Like, he can guard anybody.
Yeah, and I think it's hard to judge him based on stats. Some people are like, oh, look at his rebounding rate, it's not that good, and blah, blah, blah. I think it's just tough to judge the statistical output of that Kentucky team.
Of anybody on that team.
Yeah. I mean, even Towns, like, it's, you know, was he that good in the post? Because Towns is, like, not that far off from Jahlil Okafor in the post. But he also had way fewer possessions, so it's easier to be more efficient with fewer possessions. So, you know, maybe that is kind of like smoke and mirrors.
The Towns would have done so much other stuff on a different team.
Yeah, absolutely.
He was developed in a very specific way there, and I think that made sense. And now he's showing that he can do other stuff in these workouts, and he's going to be a different kind of player in the NBA. But I mean, Willie, unless it's an injury concern, then I would be shocked if he went past like 6 or so.
Yeah. All right, Miles Turner.
And if the Knicks took him fourth, I wouldn't blink. I wouldn't.
I think it's kind of smart.
Yeah.
Miles Turner out of Texas. There's something about him I just can't buy into, and can't explain it. Great shot blocker. Looks like he'll be able to shoot a little bit. I don't know what it is. I just can't get on board. I've watched him a bunch. Just something doesn't do it for me.
By on board, do you mean you can't see him as a lottery pick, or do you think
I mean, I wouldn't think it's crazy if he goes in the lottery, because I think you're drafting for some potential there, and I don't mind going after that potential. I think we're a little too crazy when we're like, oh, you're only drafting on potential, there's no sub. Like, I think that's fine in a top 10 pick. I think sometimes you need to swing for the fences, right?
How many times have we seen guys that in their third year have breakout?
Right,
happens
exactly.
Every season.
Yeah, like
almost nobody contributes to winning in a major way as a rookie anyway.
Yeah,
Like, that almost never happened.
I have zero evidence or zero reason to not buy into Miles Turner. I just, for some reason, like, it just doesn't click. I can't explain it. I don't know if it's just the Texas uniform, and I just think if it's not Kevin Durant from Texas, I don't buy in. Like, I don't know what it is, but it's, I just don't see it.
You don't know what is not going to translate. You just think it's not.
I just can't give you a good reason.
Okay. Sometimes you just got to go with your gut, Zach.
Sure.
I think he'll be pretty good. I just don't think it'll necessarily happen in his first year.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be an adjustment for him. But I think he'll block shots. He'll rebound. He's got some offensive talent too. I think late lottery, somewhere around there for him.
Yeah, like if he went to the Jazz, I think that's a good idea.
Me too.
That's a good 3-man
rotation. I would actually be really excited about that.
Yeah,
as a Jazz fan,
I could get on board if he goes to the Jazz, just because I think that's the right development environment.
Yeah,
for him.
I'm so excited about that team.
Even though I can't buy into Miles Turner for whatever unexplained reason, I still buy into him more than Frank Kaminsky, who's number 5. I think Kaminsky's a good backup. A better Olenek, who I think is not that good.
I was waiting for that one. It's just not that good. I thought you're gonna have some sort of
like if you had me pick between Tyler Zeller and Frank Kaminsky right now, I would take Zeller in a heartbeat.
So would I. But I think this is gonna sound really harsh to people who think that Kaminsky is going to be really good, but I don't even mean it that way. I think he'll be a really good matchup-specific player. I think the post-up stuff will translate, but not against guys that are longer and bigger than him. But it'll totally translate if he gets switched onto somebody, or if he's just matched up with a guy off the bench that is one of those fours that just shoots jump shots and doesn't play defense. Like,
yeah.
I think he can play a bit of both front court positions off the bench, and that's cool. I just think that the numbers are really good, and the shooting at that size is really appealing, so you get a little bit carried away. But I think the weaknesses there are real.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, there was a report today, I think maybe from Woj, about how maybe it was from Spears, but I'm pretty sure I saw it on some kind of Yahoo account of the Bobcats, the Hornets. The Hornets were looking to move Cody Zeller. And if they are able to do that before the draft, they're going to take Frank Kaminsky at number 9. I think that's insane.
Why are they giving up on Cody Zeller already?
I mean, I'd rather have Cody Zeller than Frank Kaminsky.
Me too.
I know I'm just naming white big men right now, but I swear they're...
No, you're mentioning Zeller brothers.
Yeah.
Well,
I would take the Zeller family over Frank Kaminsky.
Wow. Luke Zeller?
I mean, I wouldn't definitely take Kaminsky over Olenek. Yeah, I think if... And here's the thing that I also think is important. When you're drafting anywhere in, like, the top 20, or I guess anywhere in the first round, you're just hoping to get a guy who you can have in your rotation for the next 10 years. Like, I know it's like, oh, you got to get a star in the top 10 or all that crap. As long as you have a guy who fits and fits well into rotation for two contracts, that's a success. I don't think that's a bust by any means. But if you're drafting Kaminsky to be a starter of the future, I think that's a mistake. If you're drafting him to be your third big man of the future, that I like.
I think that's totally fine.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want him going up against the elite big men in the NBA. I just wouldn't be comfortable with that. But I think off the bench he's fine, and he can be an offensive weapon. And I think the problem is, I really actually like his skills. Like, I enjoyed watching him as a college player. I just don't think...
Yeah, he was fun to watch in college.
As a college player, he did everything. He got touches on the perimeter. He was a creator. He was a passer. He was all of these things. And I just don't know that he's doing that against NBA defenses.
Yeah. And then last guy, Robert Upshaw, there was a thing with like his heart, right?
Yes.
And he had issues.
And he didn't finish the season.
Right. He had issues at Washington.
Yeah.
I mean, he may be like a perfect second round risk, right? I think at this point you're crazy to take him in the first round. I don't think he'll really go in the first round, but as like a shot blocker, great shot blocker. That's a guy I think you take in the second round and send to the D League for the next 2 years.
Yeah, I think he's, as long as you're not risking a high pick, I'm fine with him going. Yeah. Like even if it's the very end of the first round, I don't think that would be crazy.
Yeah.
But I think it's more likely the scenario that you mentioned about going in the second round, where it's just kind of you're taking a flyer, you'll put him on your summer league team, you'll send him to the D League if you need to, and you just have this kind of high potential guy. And I think like it's not that different from when we were talking about Christian Wood. It's like they're different kinds of players, totally. But I think the theory of drafting either of them is like, let's see, whatever.
Right.
This could be great.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. All right. Well, that covers us talking prospects.
Bam! We did the whole thing.
We did it in only about 3 hours over the last 2 days.
Hey, we talked about other stuff.
Sure. Yeah, we talked about
40-some minutes about Cousins yesterday.
Yeah, and we talked about Batman. How big of a joke Batman is in terms of the bat signal and all that. Sea urchins. Some people really don't like my Batman takes.
I told you this would happen.
You know what? I'm going to bleep this, but f*** Batman and f*** you for liking him. How about that?
Is that how you want to go out?
Yeah, I think that's how we're going to...
Don't even include this part. Just cut it off.
No, I'm going to include this part. Follow you on Twitter at OutsideTheNBA. Follow me on Twitter at TalkHoops. Please leave a 5-star, 4-star review, maybe even 3-star, and subscribe on iTunes. Helps us a lot. And James, we will be chatting it up on draft night.
So excited. Happy draft day, everybody.